Kane is in the building.
Guys, I just got some new shirts from Liberty Shirt Co. And I gotta tell you, these shirts are amazing. They stretch like workout clothes, they're breathable, and super soft. I love these shirts. And you could get your own Freedom Flex Performance shirts by going to www.libertyshirtco.com. And when you use the promo code 3PEAT at checkout, you will save 10% on your order. That's www.libertyshirtco.com and promo code 3PEAT.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 3PEAT podcast. Whether you're joining us from last week's episode or you're joining us for the first time, welcome. This is episode 2 of season 5, and we've got another great episode for you lined up as always. I'm your host this week, Alex Castle, and as always, I have the pleasure of being joined by
Stephen Bonazzo,
Josh Fromowitz.
Before we get into talking about football for the week, just some recent news in the NBA that was released today. Lonzo Ball has a light meniscus tear in his knee, and the Chicago Bulls and him have concluded that he will need surgery for this. This is going to require him to be out for 6 to 8 weeks. So with that, he should be returning to the playoffs. I believe the Bulls are the number one seed right now. So if they can hold on with Lonzo's absence, things should be good. Stevie, my condolences. As a Bulls fan, I know this must be a big hit for you guys, but you got to stay strong. You still got LaVine. You still got Caruso. You still got some nice key guys on that team.
You know, it's going to hurt the loss. It's definitely a big loss. One of our prized possessions of the offseason. But like you said, we have LaVine. Well, I mean, LaVine's a little hurt right now, but he should be coming back soon. We still have DeMar, Vooch. And I'm impressed with Io Dosunmu, our second-round pick. From Illinois, he's a Chicago kid, so he's been really playing well. And Kobe White, he's been playing pretty well too. So, yes, it's a big loss, but I think between those two guys, if they can keep, you know, stepping it up and playing the way they have been, then they shouldn't be in too much trouble. They just got to stay afloat. Even it would be nice if they can hold on to the number one spot, but if they don't, just we got to stay within the, you know, first like four seeds, and then I'll be happy.
Absolutely. And Billy Donovan, still coach, correct? He's still the coach of the Bulls. Very confident in him. I liked what he did at the college level. I liked the turnaround that he's had with this Bulls team. So if I'm in your shoes, Stevie, I'm continuing to be optimistic. But we got to talk some football now. We super wild card weekend was last weekend. And what a fun weekend as a football fan. Playoffs on Saturday, playoffs on Sunday. I have to admit, though, some of the games were definitely underwhelming. I think that's just because of the matchups we experienced. You know, for example, the Tampa-Philly matchup, you know, Tampa's, you know, higher seed, Philly just squeaked in. They had their ups and downs this season. Wasn't the best game. The Buffalo-New England game was something to experience. We'll get into that a little bit later. But first, I want to talk about, I guess, just the overview of the weekend. You know, the Bengals, the Bills, the Bucks, the Niners, the Chiefs, and the Rams all advance. So, Josh, we'll start with you. What were your biggest takeaways from this weekend? Doesn't have to be good, doesn't have to be bad.
Like you said, I was very surprised at the amount of blowouts that took place this weekend, because it seemed like we were watching more garbage time football instead of playoff football. I think Joe Scheisty, Joe Burrow, is legit. Shout out our hack guy, man of many hats, TJ Hummel, for that. He had to get a little shout out at some point. So Joe Scheisty, Joe Burrow, he looked cool, calm, and collected in his first playoff game. I don't know about you, how you guys felt, but watching that game, it looked like he was a seasoned vet tossing it to Ja'Marr Chase. It's crazy that Chase is only a rookie and Joe Burrow only is in his first full season, because he missed most of last year with a torn ACL. And this is the first Bengals playoff win since 1991, before any of us were alive. The Bengals are a team to reckon with. I think they will have the Tennessee Titans on upset alert this week. And what the only thing that concerns me is their defense. But with the way their offense is rolling right now, I am excited to watch more Bengal football as the postseason rolls on.
Yeah, I definitely think that the Bengals are the real deal. I do agree with you that the defense is the one question. The guy on their line, Trey, I can't think of his last name.
Trey Hendrickson.
Yes, he was just cleared. He was just cleared.
He's a huge piece that they got from New Orleans. He was their defensive line leader. I think he had 8.5 sacks this year. So
no, he had like 14. He had like double digits.
Maybe that's what he had with New Orleans.
The past two seasons he's had double digit sacks. Okay.
I knew he was a force. I didn't realize he was that good, but
yeah, and he wears no gloves.
I know he doesn't wear gloves. He's a beast for that.
Yeah, and that cold Cincy weather. Ooh.
Yeah, he's a big piece, and it's going to be a very interesting game. And man of many hats, Mr. Humble, I'm curious to see what your thoughts are on this Cincinnati team and Joe Shiesty.
First of all, shout out Joe Shiesty and Jay Chizzy. The Bengals surprised a lot of us. I mean, to be fair, we knew Joe Burrow was a good quarterback last year before his injury. But like you said, Josh, he looked like a seasoned vet out there. And my favorite thing is with the Bengals, like everyone knows that they're going to throw to Ja'Marr Chase. And the Bengals are basically saying, hey, we're going to throw to Ja'Marr Chase and there's nothing you can do about it. And it's going to be a fun matchup to see against these Titans.
And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I remember last year, Joe Burrow, he started off strong, like you said, but and then he gets hurt, and then everyone just stopped talking about him because of Justin Herbert's emergence. And even most of this year, it was all Justin Herbert, Justin Herbert, Justin Herbert. And Justin Herbert's out of the playoffs. He's sitting home watching playoffs on his couch because the Chargers coach is an idiot and doesn't know football and is the reason why they're not in the playoffs. And Joe Burrow is now in the playoffs, and now he is the talk of football again. We saw he was the talk of football when he was dominating at LSU with Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase and the beginning of last year up until he got hurt. And then once he got hurt, everyone's like, oh, did the Bengals make the wrong choice going for Burrow? Should they have gotten Justin Herbert? But Joe Burrow is scary when he's locked in. And yeah, everyone knows he's throwing to Ja'Marr Chase, but it's not like they only have Ja'Marr Chase. If Joe Mixon, who's a Pro Bowl running back, they have Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, Uzuma's at a tight end. He's got a few touchdown catches. So this offense is probably the hottest offense right now in football.
I just love that the Bengals advanced. They're just a fun storyline, a fun team. And I'm rooting for them against Tennessee. I have liked the Titans in the past, but definitely more invested in the Bengals. Stevie, aside from Joe Shiesty and the Bengals, what was a big takeaway from you from this wild card weekend?
So I will say I have like two things. One, if you look at it, really, the teams that won, their quarterbacks played great. Brady, Joe Burrow, Matt Stafford,
Josh Allen,
you know, like those guys really helped to lead their team. Even Jimmy G in the beginning part of the game looked pretty good. And then, you know, towards the end there looked a little shaky, but for the most part, all the QBs and the teams that won, their QBs played a really solid game. My biggest takeaway from this weekend is that the Packers, who are the number one seed, their biggest threat to them are the 49ers. The 49ers are a legit team. And for a while there, a lot of people stopped talking about them. They were out of the playoff race and playoff contention. And, you know, they snuck, not that they snuck in, but they kind of snuck in by beating the Rams the last week of the season. And now look at them. I mean, they were manhandling Dallas there for a little bit. And now they're going to go into Green Bay. And they've had recent, you know, if you look at their track record, they've had recent success against Green Bay, especially in the playoffs. So if you're the Niners, you shouldn't be like, oh, great, we have to play the Packers. No, you should be like, let's go. Because if you look at it, you know, it's kind of leaning more towards the 49ers. So I would say Debo's just been an absolute beast on the field. You can just use him anywhere, and he's going to succeed with the ball. Their defense, you know, they've had some injury scares last week with Fred Warner going down with an ankle. But his recent tweet, or his tweet from earlier in the week, provided some optimism that seems like he should play. Even if he's not 100%, I'd rather have a non-100% Fred Warner out there than no Fred Warner out there. Nick Bosa, you know, I know he has a concussion that could hurt if he doesn't play. But either way, I mean, this team's playing well. They have so many great coaches in there, so many great minds there. Kyle Shanahan, their offensive coordinator. What's his name? Mike McDaniel?
Mike McDaniels, I think.
Mike McDaniels. I'll look it up just to double check. But they have so many great coaches in there. Yeah, it is Mike McDaniel. You're right. So they just have such good leadership in that team. And really, it looks like Bosa seems like he should be good to go for this Sunday. So, yeah. So that's what I'm saying. I really think the 49ers are the Packers' biggest threat. And really, and even so, say if the 49ers do beat the Packers Sunday and they play the winner of Tampa and the Rams, they should be scared too. I think the Niners are like a serious Super Bowl threat. And I think they're more dangerous this year than they were when they made the Super Bowl a couple years ago. I just think they are so balanced, and they have, I mean, like Debo, you know, back in when they last made the Super Bowl, like he was just a rookie then. Now he's a third year guy who's coming off this huge year. He's got a lot of confidence now. Jimmy G, you know, a lot of people kind of give him shit. I still think he's a solid veteran to have. And I know he's a little banged up, so hopefully, you know, he can get over that. And the defense, maybe it doesn't seem like they're as dominant as they were a couple years ago, but they're still playing fast. They're still playing hard. They're still flying around. And it's very fun to watch the Niners. So I'm just saying keep an eye out for them, because from what I watched the past couple weeks, and especially Sunday, they're not messing around.
I'm watching that game from a different angle than you are, Stevie. Because I saw a stat earlier today, the Packers, the last four times they've had the home field advantage, or so coming off a bye essentially, like they are last week, they have lost all four of their last matchups. So home field advantage is a disadvantage at Lambeau.
Let's make it 0-5.
You're a little biased, you Bear fan. But Jimmy G also has success there, because 2 years ago, or 3 years ago now, the 2 or 3 years where they won and advanced the Super Bowl.
It was 2019, so technically like 2 or 3. I don't know. Depends how you count.
Jimmy G had success up at Lambeau because he had to knock off the Packers, who were the one seed.
Well, actually, I hate to correct you again, but that game was actually in San Fran at Levi's Stadium a couple years ago when Mostert ran for like over 200 yards.
That was it, Levi?
Yeah. I thought, yeah, because it passed, because last year Green Bay was the one seed, and then the one seed this year. But no, that game was actually in.
Regardless, San Fran has Aaron Rodgers' number wherever they play. And Aaron Rodgers and LaFleur have yet to make a deep playoff run, no matter what seed they are. Last year, they were the one seed, and they got bounced early. Like, possibly this year. So I think LaFleur, Rodgers, their game plan is going to be trying to attack early, because you can't beat these 49ers trailing, because they're too explosive. Debo Samuel, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, their other weapons can beat you in so many ways. So the Packers are going to try to attack early with Devontae Adams, Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon, whoever else they're going to throw at you. So I'm excited for this game. And it could go either way, like you said, Stevie. And I know you obviously want the Packers to lose.
Regardless of, you know, me being a Bears fan, I mean, the game itself, I'm hoping will be good, and I think it will. I mean, when they played earlier in the season, Green Bay beat them by 2 points. So it seems like whenever the Niners and Packers play, it's always a good game. And they've had a lot of pretty big-time matchups over the years. So, and another thing, too, that I kind of want to bring up, and Castellano, if you were going to bring it up, or sorry to kind of go all over the place, but it's going to be – so it's going to be Shanahan versus LaFleur again. And then
– You read my mind.
Sorry, I did. You know, I'll let you take it away.
I'm assuming you're going to bring up what was I think we all saw on social media today, how they were under the same coaching staff with Washington in 2013. Was that what you were going to bring up? Yeah, I was just going to say it's another great storyline added to this game. And I didn't even know that stat.
And then, there's another stat on top of it. So I want to add in about after you finish, Castle.
I was just going to say, I didn't know that stat about Rodgers' record at Lambeau. Very interesting. I think there's a lot on both sides. I mean, we've talked a lot about, you know, what San Francisco's got going for them, but you can't necessarily count out the Packers. I mean, Rodgers is having an MVP caliber season. They've got a great dual threat at running back. Their defense has been great. I don't know what the status of Jaire Alexander is, but if he's back, that's going to be huge.
I believe he is back, because he they took him off the – he came off the IR for pretty like a little while ago now, but then he was on the COVID list. So now I think he's clear of everything, so he should be playing Sunday.
Yeah, and that's going to be huge. And Randall Cobb was activated today, one of Rodgers' favorite targets. So there's a lot going for this game. That's great. But Josh, what's this other stat you got to drop on us? I'm curious now.
So you mentioned the three coaches in the NFC.
We didn't mention the other one.
You mentioned the third one, who's also in the playoffs.
Yes, Sean McVay, Rams coach. And you two just mentioned LaFleur and Shanahan, Green Bay and San Fran. And all three of them are younger than Tom Brady, who is playing against Sean McVay. I think that part is really cool and fascinating.
That is insane. I mean, because I saw that too, and I was like, you don't, I mean, we know that Brady's old, but you really don't.
So is Rodgers. Rodgers is older than Sean McVay.
Yeah. Well, Sean McVay is just super young. And even if, I mean, you know, like now his coaching looks a little older, but like, when he was hired when he was 32 years old. I mean, that's so young.
He's already been to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And now he's been the coach for what, like 6 years now? Because I think he got hired in what, 2016? So, you know, 6 years he's already been coaching, which is, you know, pretty long time in the NFL. Especially, and he'll be coaching there for a lot longer. But, I mean, so that's crazy. I mean, just both of those, like, stats are crazy how Washington, well, I mean, and for Castle and TJ, like, this is good for you guys. I mean, Washington at one point had Matt LaFleur, Sean McVay, and Kyle Shanahan, who Shanahan's been to the Super Bowl a couple of times, one as an offensive coordinator, one as a head coach. McVay's been to the Super Bowl as a head coach. LaFleur has led his team to the number one seed in back-to-back years. And Washington chose to not go with any of those guys and ended up going with Jay Gruden.
Jay Gruden, that's what I meant.
Yeah, Jay Gruden. So, and then to think that Tom Brady, who's playing is older than all those guys who are coaching and leading their teams. I mean, it really is unbelievable. But just goes to show you how, you know, brilliant Tom Brady's career is, and, you know, just really kind of, he is a legend. I mean, whether you want to admit it or not, I mean, the dude is 44 years old and still going out there. I mean, he had probably one of his best years of his career this year. And, you know, he's now in the playoffs older than some of the coaches. Not only is he older than pretty much every other single player in the playoffs, he's older than some of their coaches. So it really is unbelievable.
You can't count out Tom Brady. And one more thing I want to add to this, because I do want to move on to one of the AFC games. I saw something on one of the Bleacher Report pages that every clock in Tom Brady's workout room is set for the Super Bowl. That just shows you how locked in the sky is. I mean, that's just a scary thing. That is just a scary thing to think about, that even though he's not the number one seed, even though I don't consider Tampa, you know, you look at all the teams left in the NFC, I don't even consider them the top three. He's still got that mindset. And I think that's what separates him. And that's how he's able to still be in a position where he's 44 and Sean McVay is 35. So it's crazy. But the other game that I want to talk about from last week is the Chiefs game. We don't need to talk about that. That was Ben Roethlisberger's retirement party that we all just happened to watch on live TV. But the game that I want to talk about is that Buffalo New England game. I mean, let's not even get into the incredible performance that Josh Allen had, the fact that every drive he scored. But I want to talk about Mac Jones. Last time these two matched up, it was that crazy game where there was a game after that. And who won that game?
Buffalo.
Oh, so Buffalo did win the last game. Okay. Well,
during the regular season, both teams won on the road.
Both teams won on the road, which is also interesting. But Mac Jones, so the first game, he didn't throw that much. We know that was the crazy game where they were running 95% of the time. Second game, he lost on the road. So right there, those two elements, not throwing a lot in the first game, already losing on the road, and then you have this crazy weather in Buffalo. That's a recipe for, you know, for a lot for a rookie to deal with. But this is Mac Jones. This is the guy who led his team to 7 wins in a row. This is a guy who was part of Alabama. This was a guy who, this was the best system for him to be in. He was with Bill Belichick. He's the next Tom Brady. All of this stuff. And I think this game, he was just flat out exposed. Making these short passes, can't do anything with the deep ball. Just no confidence. And we have a member of this podcast who has been trying to prove this for so long. And I think this game really speaks volumes. So now I'm going to let him speak. Josh, take it away. I mean, you know, you're a Jets fan. A lot of Patriots fans, I'm sure, are still going to harp on the fact that he's a rookie and, you know, this was just a tough situation. But I think you got the right idea with what the situation with Mac Jones is.
I mean, to say I expected it is, like, it's far from it. I knew the Patriots would lose, but the way they did was just even better. And to see the Patriot fans reacting the way they are and carrying on because they are so spoiled and don't know how to react after a loss, it's what made the past week so enjoyable for literally every single person in America, because everyone is seeing these Patriot fans who probably have been in hibernation since Brady left almost 2 years ago now. So some of them are either Tampa fans now, or they're crying, wishing that they had Brady back, or they're saying that, oh, Mac is a rookie. Which brings me to my first point. You gotta stop saying that. You can't say, oh, Mac Jones is in the best system. He's the best rookie out of the best rookie quarterback because he has Bill Belichick. Okay, so how come in the big time games he can't perform? And he kind of seemed like, which I knew, he was going to be the reason why it got to a shootout. Not a shootout. Their defense was able to hold up, and it was reliant on their offense to put up points. They weren't going to be able to. I mean, their defense was a complete letdown, so that's besides the point. But Mac Jones in the big games did not perform well this year. In his three games against Buffalo this year, the first game you mentioned, Castle, the terrible conditions, great game plan from Bill Belichick. He threw the ball three times, went 2 of 3 for 14 yards. The second game, which they lost to Buffalo in New England, Mac Jones threw for only 145 yards, had 2 interceptions. Yes, Stevie?
Hey, no, you keep going. I want you to finish, and then I'll talk.
Feel free to jump in whenever you want.
Oh, thank you.
The second game in New England, he had 2 interceptions, 145 yards. And that was a crucial game because if New England won, then they would have had a complete advantage over the AFC East. But Buffalo won, and that was a huge turning point in their season because then Buffalo was in control and needed the last week a win against the Jets to clinch the AFC East and home field advantage for week one, which they ended up doing. Mac Jones choked in that game, 2 interceptions, and couldn't lead his team to victory. They lost 33-21. It wasn't the last week. There was 2 more games after it. But regardless, it was still the same thing because Buffalo won out. Then come wild card game, the biggest game of Mac Jones' rookie season. Also 2 interceptions. And their defense was atrocious. The defense that everyone had been raving about all year. 7 drives, 7 touchdowns. Josh Allen had the first perfect game in NFL history, regular season or playoffs. The first team in NFL history to score a touchdown on every single drive. No punt, no field goal, no turnovers. 7 touchdowns. And then they brought in Mitch Trubisky for Neil, but we're not counting that. Stevie, you had to get that in there. So, there you go. There's your Mitch shout-out. This is against the Bill Belichick defense that I had been hearing about all year long. And I had been hearing that they're the reason that the Patriots will go far in the playoffs. And Mac Jones, with his accurate decision-making, can lead them to a deep playoff run and potentially we'll get a Brady versus Belichick Super Bowl because of it. I mean, there's so many flaws. Obviously, looking back, it's easy to point them out now, but all along, just hearing the Patriot fans just go on and on about Mac Jones, Mac Jones, Mac Jones, it sickened me to the point where I was like, you got to make up your minds because it's one thing or another. So, Stevie, I'm going to let you jump in because it's easier to bounce off someone instead of just me rambling. Because I'm not you. I don't like rambling.
All right. Let's see. Now we're going to get a little beef with rambling. No, this is what I have to say. The Patriots absolutely sucked that game. They look like they should not have been there. Their defense was just awful.
Before you go on, I just want to make a quote because it speaks volumes. For all you non-believers, disrespect us. Talk crap about the defense like we're the third best defense in the league. All we hear is about their defense. They can't stop a nosebleed. 25th in the league. We're the ones being disrespected. Bart Scott, 11 years ago. That can't wait speech. Go on, Stevie.
All right. Back to what I was saying. So the whole Patriots just looked awful. The coaching looked awful. The players looked awful. And here's what I say. Mac Jones, he should get credit for leading them to this spot because you know what? Last year, when Cam Newton was a starter, he couldn't. And I know he didn't have as many weapons as Mac Jones had. But even then, I mean, like Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, they're good tight ends, They're solid, but it's not like they're game changers. Kendrick Bourne, he's not a game changer. Nelson Agholor, not a game changer. I mean, these are just solid veteran guys. So even if Cam had them or not, it's not like, you know, Mac Jones got a Devontae Adams or someone like that. And defensively, pretty much have the same defense without, okay, Matt Judon, that was a big addition for the pass rush. But they still had J.C. Jackson. They still had their other corner. So this Patriots team was still pretty similar to what it was. And, you know, Cam Newton, who was an MVP winner and made that Super Bowl appearance, he couldn't lead this Patriots team to the playoffs. Mac Jones did. So you got to give him credit. And I know with some of the big games, he didn't really perform as well. And yes, there's no denying that. When the playoff game, he looked awful. A couple things. One, Mac Jones has to get used to the cold. And I'm not trying to use the cold as an excuse, but the dude has no experience in playing with the cold. He's a Florida boy. It doesn't get cold in Florida. He went to Alabama, maybe gets and played in the SEC, maybe gets a little chilly here and there, but not really. And then all the big-time bowl games that he's playing in are either under dome, in domes, or they were playing in Miami. So he really didn't play in cold weather his whole life and in college. So you throw him in New England, and then to have him play in Buffalo in mid-January, where it's like 0 degrees, feels like -7, and you expect him to win a playoff game? I mean, listen, I lived in Connecticut my whole life, and I'm still not used to the cold. So, you know, Mac Jones is going to have to get used to playing in this cold weather feel. And I think there's a helicopter right outside my room. I don't know. My whole room's shaking. But back to my point. So, and then another thing too is he made some throws where they weren't the best throws, but the receivers should have caught them and they dropped them. Like that one that was wide open to Hunter Henry and he completely just dropped. I mean, it was awful. Yes, it was low and kind of tough. But when you're getting paid millions of dollars to catch a football in the NFL, you better catch a football. So he didn't really get that much help. Also, Josh Allen, who led the Bills to that perfect offense where they scored on every single drive, he's now made the playoffs 3 years in a row. And his first game, his first year in the playoffs wasn't so good because I'm pretty sure they lost the wild card game that was, or I think they made the wild card and lost. And he was 24 for 46 with 264 yards. Not 264 yards, it doesn't sound too bad. But on 46 attempts, you know, with only 24 completions, I mean, you know, when you're throwing that ball that much, you should be completing more of your passes and you should have probably have more yards. He had no touchdowns and no picks. So really, they didn't do too much in the passing game. But then last year, another year in the playoffs, more experience, he had 817 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 1 interception. So he jumped up a little bit and led them to the AFC Championship game where they ended up losing to the Chiefs, who obviously made the Super Bowl. Now this year, first game, here he has matched his total of touchdowns to last year in which he played like 3 games in the playoffs and already has over 300 yards. So my point is, you know, Mac Jones, not every guy is going to be like Mahomes where you have Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and, you know, you're leading your team to the Super Bowl in the first year you start under Andy Reid. You know, I know Mac Jones has Bill Belichick, but he doesn't have those kind of weapons and he's not the kind of playmaker that Pat Mahomes is. So you see a guy like Josh Allen, who's having all the success now and everyone's talking about it. Nice. But he didn't have that success right away. But the more experience he's gotten, the more big time games he's played in, his game has elevated. So I'm not saying that's going to happen with Mac Jones, but no one should call him a bust or no one, you know, I think maybe he did get a little overhyped a little bit at times, but he should still get some credit because he did lead this team to the playoffs. And this was, you know, the first really big time game he's played in the NFL. And I think the more he gets used to playing in the cold, the bigger the games he plays in, he should elevate his game. And if you get him, you know, some more big time weapons, you're going to see the play. You should see that play elevate. So that's what I got to say. I'm not, you know, trying to totally defend him because he, you know, listen, he did not look impressive at all, but he shouldn't totally get knocked for his performance. You know, in some of the big time games, especially the one last Saturday.
I think that's very fair. I think both of you make very compelling sides. I think at the end of the day, the two biggest things to take away from this are, one, he is not the guy that he was hyped up at the beginning of the season. I think he's average, maybe could elevate his game, like you said, Stevie, but it's tough to say. And the other takeaway is that this was his only first playoff game of his NFL career. So giving him the benefit of the doubt with that, okay, fine. But I think the conclusion, which we can all agree on, is he's not who he was hyped up to be at all. I just don't see enough in this guy's game that really makes him special. You know, he's a pocket passer, doesn't really seem to be too athletic. He doesn't like to throw the deep ball. I mean, there's just nothing special that goes to his game.
I really like when I see him and I see the other rookie quarterbacks from this year, nothing about his game just says wow to me. Like Justin Fields, when I watch him, I see how he escapes the pocket and I see how he could launch that deep ball. Same with Zach Wilson, Trevor Lawrence, Trey Lance in the few games that he's played. Mac Jones is, I'm going to throw a screen route to Damian Harris or Kendrick Bourne, you're going to do a slant. And that's the wow plays that New England fans rave about. But that's yards after catch. That's on the receiver. That's not on the quarterback. That's on good blocking. And New England has the best offensive line this year, so he was blessed with that. They made some acquisitions. And his receivers are doing the jobs for him, essentially. So Mac Jones reminds me of Jimmy G. He's a guy who can get the job done, yes, but he won't, like, win you games, essentially. It's up to everyone else winning you games. And when I look for a quarterback, and yes, that might be good enough for some teams, but this New England team now, I really don't know if that's good enough, considering what else they need. And they need a quarterback who could win them games. Brady was that guy for them for so long. Mahomes is that guy for Cincinnati, Kansas City. Josh Allen is that guy for Buffalo. Mac Jones isn't that guy for New England.
I think that's a great comparison to Jimmy G. When I look at Mac Jones's game, that's what I see with Jimmy G. And it's funny because they're both number 10, and Jimmy G started his career out with the Patriots. So it'll be very interesting to see what the future holds for Mac Jones. But the Bills did advance.
And it's funny, literally a day after the game, I don't say I agree with this. I think it was Skip Bayless who said that the Patriots should trade Mac Jones.
Ah, good old Skip Bayless.
Did you see that?
I didn't see that. I think you mentioned it. I didn't see that. Skip Bayless, I think, is like Stephen A. He likes to make these out there comments just to get the views. But
I do wonder if, let's say, I'm going to ask Steve this. Let's say if the same result happens next year where they have a good regular season and a bad loss in the playoffs next year. So Mac Jones has the good regular season stats, but nothing like too flashy. And then an early wild card exit. Will they pursue a trade similar to how Miami is looking at Tua?
I mean, that's a tough question to ask because, you know, if he's looking solid in the regular season and he leads you to playoffs, that's good. But then if he doesn't win you the big-time games, you know, saying if he's the one that really, you know, turns the ball over, can't get the ball downfield, push the ball downfield, then, yeah, because you get these guys to – win games, but not only win games, but to win pretty much all of the games to win the Super Bowl.
Mitch Trubisky has technically led the Bears to the playoffs. Doesn't really mean shit, though.
No. So that is, you know, that is good. So I guess, to be honest, we won't know until next year. We'll have to wait and see what happens next year. But I think it's too early to give up on him or to trade him. I mean, when he's under contract, why would you try to get a guy? And I mean, you know, see if he can take the next steps. But if we're having the same kind of conversation next year or the year after, and by the end of his rookie contract, you know, by the time it ends, and, you know, he's looked solid throughout the regular season, but he can't win the big time games, then yeah, you're going to have to get someone new. And there's just no way around that. And, you know, you need these guys, especially at that position, to win you the big time games and to keep you competitive in the big time games. So, you know, it's just going to have to wait and see how each year unfolds. And especially a team like the Patriots, like we've said, they've had a guy who won those big time games for so long. So they're not used to guys that can't. So all we can do is sit back and see what happens.
Absolutely. And a common theme that we've talked about while talking about this game has been quarterbacks who are competitive, who can lead their teams to the big games, who can win big games. And that's what we're going to see in this matchup with the Bills and the Chiefs. You know, Josh Allen, as you've pointed out, Stevie, has improved in the playoffs throughout his last three appearances. Patrick Mahomes, obviously, we know what he's capable of. So there are a lot of different storylines for this game. And I want to raise this question to the man of many hats himself, TJ. I know that you got a little bit of a different view of this game than some other people might think. So, you know, going into this game, I think a lot of people have Kansas City favored, but what are your thoughts? You think they're still the favorites, or you think Buffalo can get something up their sleeve?
I think the Chiefs should not be the favorite, and here's why. I saw this debate on First Take this morning, and it kind of opened my eyes a bit. So we know the Chiefs, right? Patrick Mahomes, all the weapons he has, Andy Reid, we get the gist. So give me that same team from last year and compare them to this year. It's not the same team. We've seen the Kansas City defense stumble and look real slow out there, allowing teams to score points against them. And then Mahomes has to work his magic to win the game. I think this game, if the Bills go down to Arrowhead and beat Patrick Mahomes, it's like Josh Allen is the new quarterback to beat in the AFC. And I wanna hear your thoughts on this, boys. I think if Josh Allen goes down and wins, he will dethrone Patrick Mahomes of being that guy in the AFC, and he will become the new quarterback to beat. What do you guys think?
I mean, I see what you're saying, but it's still too soon because I think it all depends on the outcome of that game. Like, if Mahomes looks terrible and Josh Allen is dominating, okay, fine. But I think it's still ultimately decide, like, well, we got to see who wins the Super Bowl. Because if Josh Allen gets bounced the next round, then I think it's still irrelevant because then you could throw in, let's say, Joe Burrow in that conversation. Because if the Bengals win and he ends up leading the Bengals to the Super Bowl, then it shouldn't be Josh Allen in that conversation then. So it's still too early to have that debate. I think we got to wait and see how Sunday's game plays out in terms of how both quarterbacks will look and how they lead their teams to play, and then probably the Super Bowl will be the ultimate deciding factor.
I think that's very fair. I do think it's too soon to say. However, I kind of am leaning more towards TJ's opinion for two reasons. One, because like Steve said, he has been improving in the playoffs. He did beat Bill Belichick in the first round. I mean, I know we just went over the whole ordeal with Mac Jones, but he still did beat one of the best coaches in the NFL. So you got to give him Mac the credit for that. And let's not forget, Patrick Mahomes did not have a great start to the season. I mean, for a while, a lot of people were not happy with the Chiefs. I mean, I've watched him play some games this season, and he's thrown a lot of balls away.
Well, to be fair, Josh Allen also didn't have the best year at times. He threw like over, I think, 15 or more interceptions this year, which is the most he's thrown. And at times, he made some really bad decisions, including the game against Jacksonville, where they only scored 6 points.
Oh, yeah. That game was awful. And I'm not disagreeing. Josh Allen is not a perfect quarterback. But with what's occurred this season, I think that if he can beat the Chiefs and make it all the way to the Super Bowl with what he's, you know, accomplished this season, I definitely think there's more to present his case. But like you said, there's still a lot of football left to be played. But from what I've seen this season, I definitely can sway more towards that opinion. Stevie, what do you think?
So this is what I have to say on the topic. So listen, I think the reason why we say this is because Patrick Mahomes has already been to 2 Super Bowls, has won a Super Bowl, while Josh Allen has yet to do that. So if Josh Allen knocks, you know, say if he beats Patrick Mahomes, you know, then he gets that next step, and it's like, he's on top. But the thing is, though, Patrick Mahomes is not going anywhere. Even if he has these slow games, you know, like slow starts to seasons or some games where he doesn't look like he's the same Patrick Mahomes, he then still leads them to the playoffs. Probably, you know, leads them, if they win this game, they're already back in the AFC championship game. You know, he still throws for over 4,000 yards, over 30 touchdowns. I mean, the dude's not going anywhere. And Josh Allen, you know, I think really, I don't think it's like one's going to be better, you know, like compare it. I mean, I think there's going to be a two-headed monster in the AFC that you're going to not want to face Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes kind of thing. So for me, I think, to be honest, it's because Patrick Mahomes has already done what, when you get into the NFL, you like hope to do, and that's to win a Super Bowl. And Josh Allen hasn't. So if Allen, like I said, takes down Mahomes, and it's like, it feels like he's already, you know, he's then moved up, and like, because he's taken the guy who's been, it was like the first person to like take down Brady, you know, to stop the Patriots run of Super Bowls. So to me, I don't think he's going to be like dethroning Mahomes, and he's going to be like the number one guy in the AFC that everyone has to watch out for. No, I think it's just going to be that's two scary teams and two scary quarterbacks that are going to be running the same conference, and that they're probably going to end up in the 1-2 seed for the next 5 or so years at least. That's what I have to say on the topic.
I think that's a very fair take. I actually also do like that take as well, because it will be very hard to dethrone Mahomes. I do think that it will take a lot. I do think it's possible, but I do also like the take of him just being another quarterback with another team that people in the AFC have to look out for. And I'm very excited for this matchup. Next to the San Francisco game, I think this is my favorite matchup of the week. I think it's going to be a great quarterback matchup. And I think that it's just going to be just some great quality football in general. And we got another great week of the playoffs coming up, and I'm looking forward to that. And we'll have a lot to talk about next week. But before we wrap up, I want to, there's something going on with hoops that I want to cover with you boys. The Lakers this season have clearly not been the team that we all thought they were going to be. Davis, I believe, is still injured. Russell Westbrook has not been playing to the level he's been playing at all. It just doesn't, this team just doesn't hold the substance that they used to. And last night, I believe it was that Russell Westbrook was benched. And I believe the comment from Frank Vogel was that he wanted to keep the guys in the game that would win them the game. And, you know, analyzing that quote, that's saying Russell Westbrook wasn't the guy that was going to win us the game. And this is a guy who I believe LeBron was very instrumental in bringing to the Lakers. You know, Westbrook, it was a homecoming. We all know what Westbrook has done in the past, but he clearly has not been providing the play to this team that anyone thought. So my two questions for you guys, and we'll start with Josh. One, what do you see Westbrook's future with the Lakers organization? Does he get moved before the trade deadline? And two, is Frank Vogel's job in major jeopardy?
Both are tough questions. Frank Vogel's job is in jeopardy, but for all the wrong reasons. I think Frank Vogel's a great coach in this league, and I think it's unfair that his job is in jeopardy because he's not the GM of this team. He's not the one who went out and brought Russell Westbrook to this team. LeBron did. He's not the one who brought in three centers and three old centers. That's their GM. He didn't construct this team, so he's working with the pieces that he has. He's found some good usage out of guys like Malik Monk and Stanley Johnson, who most teams haven't. Melo's having a good year when he was out of the league 2 years ago. So there's some bright spots on this team, but their defense is terrible. And Frank Vogel is known for his defense. I don't know why they have DeAndre Jordan and Dwight Howard. It makes no sense. Then on top of it, when Anthony Davis is healthy, you're going to expect all those three to be on the court, essentially, at least at the same time. It really doesn't make any sense the way they constructed this team. Anthony Davis has a hard time staying on the court as is. Russell Westbrook is so ball dominant that he can't be with another star like LeBron. He needs other guys around him. He needs his own team, which was OKC, which was Houston, which was Washington. Washington didn't work out because of Bradley Beal also being that star. But OKC was perfect for him when KD and Harden left because he was the guy, and then they were able to build guys around him. He was so close to making deep runs with his OKC teams. I wish he stuck it out there because I really liked him there. But now he's on the Lakers. It's hard for the Lakers to move him because of his massive contract. Teams have seen how he has regressed in his game. And the fact that he stormed out yesterday, didn't speak to the media, definitely speaks volumes. I don't see many teams wanting him or needing him because the teams that are point guard needy, there's other point guards that are being available through the trade block that are more likely to happen than a Russell Westbrook trade. So Westbrook doesn't get traded. This is a lost year for the Lakers. Frank Vogel probably will get fired, but if a team is smart, they'll go after him immediately because he's a great coach.
Yeah, it's funny. Never thought that we'd be having this conversation about the Lakers, but I think it's very spot on. What team is really going to want to take Westbrook with the type of season he's been producing? And you really can't blame it all on Vogel. I agree. But I do also agree that knowing the Lakers and, you know, knowing how LeBron, you know, acts as a GM, coach, player, all wrapped into one, after the way the season has panned out, it wouldn't surprise me if he was fired.
The Lakers had a trade accepted for Buddy Hield. Basically, the same trade that they sent for Westbrook, they had accepted for Buddy Hield, except you take away like Montrezl Harrell or someone else and a pick. And that was a great fit. And I was really, I thought that was a great fit for the Lakers because Buddy Hield is a shooter. He could score 15 plus points a night. And he's a good complimentary piece. And he's obviously wanted to get out of Sacramento. And LA is that fresh start for him. And it would have been a revival of his career. It was a great fit. But instead, they also accept the Westbrook trade, which made no sense. LeBron and AD had been pushing for this when everyone else really wanted and saw the need for a Buddy Hield. It was foolish to me. Everyone questioned that with the Nets that Harden and Kyrie and KD wouldn't work. They're all ball dominant, but they're unselfish guys. Westbrook and LeBron have always been selfish guys because they want the ball in their hands the entire time. So it's a terrible fit, and it's the season's a lost season for them because they'll need a drastic change in order to fix up their season.
Stevie, I'm not sure if you spoke on this earlier, but do you have any thoughts on it? You know, Westbrook now, you know, once was considered a top guard in the league, you know, one of the highest, I don't know if he's one of the highest, but a very, very big guy with accumulating triple doubles, very, you know, very pretty good two-way guard, I would say, very athletic. What do you, is it crazy for you now to see that he went from that to being a guy who's being benched because his coach doesn't consider him someone who could help win the game? What are your thoughts?
You know, it's because I used to really like Westbrook and KD back in their Young Thunder days. I mean, they were a fun duo to watch. And even when KD left, like Westbrook was just extremely fun to watch with the Thunder. And then he got, you know, traded to Houston, pairing back up with James Harden, and thought that would be exciting. Didn't work out. Then goes to Washington. Didn't know how that would go, but ended up not doing too bad, leading them to the playoffs. And then gets traded to the Lakers. And I thought, kind of homecoming for him. He went to, you know, he's from California, went to UCLA. He's now playing with a guy, like, you know, great talent again. But it wasn't the best fit. And it's starting to show now. And I think even just the Lakers themselves, I don't think it mattered who they acquired. I think their time is done. And the only reason why they're keeping afloat is because of LeBron James. Their roster is just too old, in my opinion. They don't really have any young talent to balance them out. They're just, you know, yes, you want to have a lot of veteran guys and all that, but there's a difference between, you know, you need to have a nice mix. And the Lakers don't. And the Lakers just have a lot of guys who want the ball and are ball dominant, like Fromwood said. Obviously LeBron for good reasoning. And even Anthony Davis, I mean, he just hasn't been the same either. So it's been a mess for the Lakers. And I'm not going to put the blame on Westbrook, but I don't think Westbrook helped it. I think the Lakers were going to kind of see this regardless. And I think Westbrook just did not help it. And I don't think this is the end for Westbrook. I mean, you know, he's on this younger 30s. I think he's like 32. And for basketball, I mean, that's still in your prime. So I think he's got years left, but he's definitely not the same guy that if you got him a few years ago or 5 years ago, you know, what it would have taken to get Westbrook. For now, I mean, it's just not the same. So I think he needs to get off his Lakers team. And I think to be honest, his best fit is a team like he had with the Thunder where he can run the show. You know, he can't be like a second guy or any, like he needs.
AKA the New York Knicks.
No, not even them. Not even the Knicks. Because I think the Knicks, you have to build around RJ. And I think, you know, Westbrook needs a team where they build it around him. And that's why I think that Thunder teams, even when KD left, still had success because, you know, they had guys around him. And then even when they got PG, you know, worked a little bit. because he's not totally ball dominant. But I don't know. It's kind of tough. And it's a little, I want to say sad, but like, because Westbrook is a lot of fun to watch. I mean, even like the other night, he still had a sick dunk. And, you know, he still makes these plays where like, wow, you know, he's flying across the court and all that. But when he's not playing well, you have to bench him. You know, you might have to get rid of him, you know, and he might not be a good addition to certain teams. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's business, right? I mean, you know, you feel bad for these guys, but one, they're making a lot of money and you expect them to do well. So when they're not doing well, you got to be on them. And especially like for Frank Vogel, his job is on the line. So if Westbrook, if you're starting him, and just because his name's Russell Westbrook and, you know, he was your big time get in the offseason, if he's not helping you win games and if he's not making you look better on the court, you have to sit him. And that's what Thibodeau did with Kemba. And, you know, and to be honest, to kind of turn around a little bit, kind of reset Kemba a little bit, humbled him a little bit, humbled, I think, the rest of the Knicks, to show, hey, it doesn't matter who you are, if you're not playing well, we will bench you. So it could be the same kind of situation. Who knows? But it is really crazy to think that Russell Westbrook, you know, might be a bench player in the next couple of days.
It really is. It's not a story that I thought we would be talking about with basketball. But hey, here we are. And that's the beauty of sports, is that anything can change at any time. And although the Lakers will not be anything special this season, we're still going to continue to see what happens with this. There's a lot of question marks with this team. You know, there's a lot that they can do, and they could be stuck. I don't really know. I think it was Josh that said it, that this team is just not really, you know, built that great. I mean, on paper, you look at all these big names, Melo, LeBron, AD, Westbrook, and you're pulling in. You're like, wow, look at all these names. But the reality is, most of these guys, maybe half, maybe more than half, are past their prime. And you just look how much the game has evolved today. These guys just can't keep up. The only guy I'm going to say can keep up is LeBron, because he's LeBron, and maybe AD. But Carmelo Anthony, love him. Russell Westbrook, not as big of a fan, but I still like him as a player. They can't keep up with the pace anymore. They're past it. Their prime was when Westbrook was with the Thunder, and Melo, I mean, you could say the Nuggets, he had some good seasons with the Knicks, but the reality is his prime was with the Nuggets. That's when Melo looked and played the best. And that's just not where they are anymore. So it'll be very interesting to see, you know, how this team moves forward. And hey, we're slowly inching closer to the trade deadline. And next show, we're going to talk about a lot of those rumors. We'll talk about how many ridiculous trades the Sixers have turned down already, if the Knicks are going to step up and make a move, how the Kings have tried to trade all their big names. There's a lot going on with this deadline. So next show, that's something we'll definitely cover. And we'll continue to talk football, because we're in prime time for football. Maybe we'll throw in some hockey there. Get our guy TJ, the man of many hats, to give us a little Bruins report. We get Josh talk about the Rangers, a nice little back and forth. So we got some good content coming up. Unfortunately, nothing to report on Major League Baseball at this time. But hopefully in the future we have something good to say. The one team that we can agree on is we're all Yankees fans, and we want to see our boys in pinstripes play this season. So hopefully there is a season, and hopefully we have more to report on. But before I conclude this episode, as always, we want to give our shout-outs. We want to give our shout-out to Wild Chat Sports. Kevin is doing great things, as always. Go check out their content. They've got some really great podcasts, some really great guests. He's done a fantastic job. So go check them out. We want to give another shout-out to our sponsor, Liberty Shirt Co. Great sponsor, great partnership that we've had with them. So we want to thank them as always. And last but not least, we want to thank TJ, the man of many hats, which includes running our social media page. We're so thankful to have you part of the team, TJ. And keep following the Instagram. We're pumping out good content. We if you haven't already, go check out the post about Lonzo Ball. Got all the updates and all the information on there. And thank you for listening as always, and we'll see you next week.